Okay, let us now continue with Father Jim's talk.
Okay, did you know my tradition is usually to open up for questions, but with this particular topic, I want to do something different. I would like to invite you to share with at least one or possibly two people in response to this question or this statement. Where in your life have you experienced the surprising, transforming love of God inviting you to experience your life differently? Where in your life have you experienced the surprising, transforming love of God to experience your life differently? My guess is it came from a surprising quarter. Maybe from an enemy or a stranger or the least likely to succeed type person, you know. But just to reflect on that for a minute and to share that with one or two people around you, and I promise you I will open up for questions after a few minutes. But it's a way of honoring this topic, is that the Creator is about awakening you, awakening us to the deeper mystery, not only of what the cosmos is about, but what God is about within you. Okay, thank you for sharing. Now, you've all had the opportunity to read the book, or at least to read this chapter, hopefully. So, what reflections or insights would you like to share with the larger group? Or do you have any comments or questions? And please use the microphone here in the middle so everybody can hear you. So, any of your reflections on your reading, or comments, or questions, thoughts?
I was talking with Linda, and she expressed being in nature by the ocean as maybe not a single transformative experience, but an ongoing. Is that right? Okay. And for myself, being always rediscovering myself as a hardcore spiritual evolutionary, I couldn't pick out a single moment in my life, but it feels like an ongoing, still present moment of transformation.
Thank you for sharing that, Ernie. And I definitely agree. Think of that as God gently tapping you and saying, remember. Remember who you are. Remember whose you are. Remember where you're at. Remember what you're about. So like little reminders. And you're speaking very traditionally. This is the authentic Orthodox tradition in a sense of creation. Creation is a great master teacher, mother and father to us all, and that this is what the native people is often referred to, is that all the lessons you need for your life are there embedded in creation. And to return back regularly, whether it's just simply going to the park, sitting in your backyard, even paying attention to your house plant, how well it's doing or how poor it's doing, everything teaches. And to just sit there and to observe, without judging it, just to observe it. You know, when I recognize that I'm kind of up to here with stuff, I like to go to the ocean. And in my imagination, I just let the sound, the smell, and the waves themselves just kind of just wash over me. I know one man who was healed. Now, I don't recommend you do this, but to me, it's a wonderful sign of being spirited. He was under psychiatric care, was taking medication for depression. And one day, he was coming home from work, and he, somehow or other, in his own words, felt led to go to the ocean. Now, this was a businessman. He was dressed in a suit. He did take off his jacket when he got to the beach. And then he walked in his shoes, fully dressed, and walked right out into the waves up to his chest. And he just stood there for 45 minutes, letting the waves, in his words, caress him, to caress his body. He said it was the strangest sensation. He said after 45 minutes, he felt like he was done. He walked out, and he noticed that the depression that had been egging him on for months was gone and didn't return. It's as if creation knew the remedy, that creation was working with Western medicine to say, here's another way that can help you. So yes, creation is meant to be our consoler, can hold our tears, can mirror back to our goodness. I mean, all the things that we see and love and admire about creation, and it can scare the hell out of us. Sometimes appropriately so. But yes, thank you.
Hi, let me ask you a question right from the readings today. I'm looking at page 108 and 109. This is talking about the unitives, you know, the high level of awareness. Unitives are attached to neither belonging nor not belonging. And this non-attachment is what allows them to witness life with greater ease. And then she goes on to say, birth and death, joy and pain are embraced as natural occurrences, quote, patterns of change in the flux of time, unquote. My question is, where does value come in? This almost sounds like Buddhist detachment. Do you have any thoughts on value?
It is very similar, but it's not having a sense of non-caring. Rather, it's caring so deeply that you're neither this nor that. You're both and. And believe it or not, that is the authentic Catholic tradition, is to honor the and-ness. Okay? In fact, Richard Rohr just wrote a book called that, Yes And. We forget the and, the bridge. We focused on this or that. We spent years, philosophy, theology, etc., now psychology. But the and is equally important, to honor that betwixt and between. Now, the drawback on that is that externally, others can perceive you as being aloof. Oh, he doesn't care. She's not with us. She's never there. She just seems to be placid. That can be a perception, but actually it's incorrect, or maybe a better word is incomplete. Because interiorly, the person has strong feelings and thoughts about both and. And the presence, this is the gift, is to both. But the attachment is to neither. Do you get it? See, that's the struggle, is that we are attached to one and the other. What she's describing is kind of like day turning into night and night into day. You don't get angry when it becomes night. Doggone it, the day is done. It's like, you know, after so many of these sunrises and sunsets, that, yeah, the sunrise will happen eventually. That's the type of attitude that she's referring to. Is that you recognize this is a part of a grander scheme. Okay? And remember, she uses that imagery of moving from the positive to the negative, and the negative back to the positive, and seeing that happens. You know from reflecting on your own feelings. You have that throughout the day many, many times. Something makes you very angry or upset, or very frustrated, or hateful, or whatever, and then, you know, 20 minutes later, you're feeling much better. It's like, oh, that's okay. You just keep going around and around. But at this place, you're not hooked into it in such a degree that you need to control it. You can let it be.
Father Jim, I have heard you talk about your experience in the sweat lodge and your so-called failure. Okay. And your experience afterwards, which was so deep and wonderful. And my question goes to the people who didn't leave the sweat lodge.
They were the A students, you see.
This is going to sound like comparing one mystical experience to another, but do you have any comments, or did you get any feedback from them as far as their experience inside?
Yeah, thank you. For them, they shared in the sense of just feeling like they let go of everything. And they didn't see it as like a win-lose situation. They certainly, as I did my sharing, didn't see it as a failure. In fact, they were shocked when I said that. I said, that's my head stuff. It was only with perspective that I realized that was a necessary experience for me to encounter the both-and-ness of my existence. But you're absolutely right. It's a good point, because it's in the community that we can get a better perspective, a fuller perspective of what some of us call success or failure, and say, well, I didn't see that as a failure. It's pretty successful in my book, you know. So, but yes,
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One thing with this whole book, and maybe the last book too, I noticed in myself, I'll read a chapter, and I get to the end, and I seem to have lost it all. Maybe it's aging. I don't retain. I have to read it two or three times. Then I was wondering too, is this a resistance, what Judy is talking about, an openness to evolving and change and seeing things differently? Is because it's unfamiliar.
Yeah.
I'm turning it off.
That's a very humble and great question, Keith. Well, let me ask you a couple more to help me understand, okay? When you read it, for example, the first time, do you find yourself almost like in a position on the opposite side of the room, kind of like not so much arguing but discussing the points? Or do you find yourself more in the position of kind of looking at what she's saying from her perspective, like right next to her, looking at the same theme or topic?
Looking at the same thing.
Okay.
I'm feeling I'm not seeing it the way you are.
Okay, that's fine. That's right. One more question. And that as you experience this, do you experience a resonance with the general theme of what she's saying? Even though, like in your mind, you're saying, well, I'm seeing it a different way. Is there a resonance, like say, within your body?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
And it's a positive resonance.
Yes. Okay, good.
It's frustrating that, what am I resonating to? My body.
Yeah. No, that's great. And we're chuckling because we're there with you. But there's probably two answers or more to your question. One is, yes, part of it could be age, but here's another angle. I think it also might be because of your decades of life experience, it resonates at such a deeper level that it's almost like water. Water that you recognize that you just not let it flow over your back, but it's already flowing in your soul. And it's a deeper resonance, using her language. It's a deeper resonance within you. So that my guess is that in a normal conversation, you'll find yourself using perhaps some of her phrases. Or maybe because you say you might offer a different point, is discovering new phrases to describe your perspective. You see? So for many people, and I assume that as an author, she would have recognized that she was naming what others already have experienced. And very often that's the greatest affirmation, is that, oh my gosh, somebody's finally said it. Or somebody's written it down. It's like, that's me. You see? So it's not just aging.
You mentioned it slightly in the earlier part, about how sometimes it can be lonely to be in the position of inquiry or receiving. It's happened every week for me that when I'm here, I'm tremendously uplifted and excited that I'm not alone, that the direction is correct. But I have to change between here and home. The drive home is not a travel, it's a travail, because I have to. She's going to ask me, how was it? And the best I'm going to be able to say is the snacks. Tell her about the nice snacks we had. And I'm trying to figure out, is that me talking to me, or is that God talking to me? In other words, am I asking the right questions of my God, or is he trying to tell me, now put it away and we'll bring it up later?
Yeah. Thank you, Peter. Boy, what a wonderful girl. I wish I could take you with me back to the seminary. Help me teach these men. Your questions are so insightful and speak of the wisdom reflection of your own life. So it's just so good. Think of it this way. This is the Mount of Transfiguration. And you're right, Peter. It's well said. When you leave here, you have to go down the hill. You're not just here for a retreat weekend. You're here for a couple of hours. And you're inspired, you're supported, you're encouraged. Your goodness and insights and life experiences is mirrored through the lives of others who are here. And you begin to leave realizing, I'm not crazy. I'm not crazy. And you may even find yourself saying that mantra several times. I'm not crazy. But the difficult part is going down the mountain. And how do you translate this into the way you live? Now, here's the difficulty. In the religious traditions, we translate our belief, and I don't mean creed. By belief, I mean that which you've experienced, that which you know to be true, deeper beyond words within you. The way you translate your belief into action is the practices of your life. So we call that spiritual practices, or the most traditional word is asceticism. Now, for many people, asceticism means flagellating yourself or fasting, you know, 3 days of the week. And what about this? Perhaps after this type of chapter, the most ascetical thing you could do is to commit to yourself that each day or three times a week, you would go and just sit in the midst of creation. Amongst the men that I work with, we call this a wandering retreat. You can go sit in a park, and all you got to do, the goal of that is just to sit and to observe without judging. Or go and sit at the beach, or sit in your backyard. That becomes a practice as a touchstone to remind you, I'm not crazy. This is real. I belong to a bigger picture than I thought before. Or maybe you'd pick something else. Maybe you a couple times a week have somebody that you can call, or somebody that you can email or text. Maybe an insight that you want to share. Because we're talking about the food of the soul. The food of the soul. And I don't know about you, but the older I get, I am willing to give up any number of meals to be fed at the level of my soul. Okay? Because you know that you will die if your soul is not fed. You will die without that food. And when you try and feed your soul with fast food, with stuff that's superficial, you know you can't contain it anymore. You just spit it out. Because it's junk. It's not real. And it pulls you down. So I want to share with you a story. The story about a little boy. He was only 6 years of age. And he had an older sister who was a know-it-all 9-year-old. And she was the oldest. And she made sure that her little brother knew that she knew it all. Okay? And she was constantly picking on him. And one day, for the umpteenth time, she got the best of him. And he couldn't take any more. And so he lashed out at his sister, and of course, because he's the one that got caught, he was punished. All right. So Grandpa lived with the family, and so little boy, after he did his time out, crawled in his Grandpa's lap and started crying. And Grandpa said, "What's the matter?" He hadn't heard the story, and so he told what happened. And he finished by saying, "Grandpa, Kathy's always making fun of me." Grandpa says, "I know how you feel." He said, "Sometimes Grandma makes fun of me too." You know, and he thought that was kind of odd. So he shared with him another secret. And says, "You know, sometimes I spill my milk. And Kathy says that I'm stupid." "Well, you know, sometimes I spill my coffee. And Grandma calls me other names." Okay? And then he decided, okay, now he's really going to share his secret. And he says, "Grandpa, sometimes I pee in my pants." And Grandpa smiles, "I know what you mean." Then he saved his biggest secret for last. As he said through tears, "Grandpa, sometimes nobody listens to me because I'm just a little boy." Now Grandpa was crying. He said, "Timmy, sometimes people don't listen to me because I'm just an old man." Our perspective of life and how we judge it has a tremendous influence upon not just our happiness, our sense of joy, but our sense of an image of who we are in the face of holy mystery. And this little story really helps to illustrate for us that in the end, none of us is completely understood. We don't even understand ourselves. Sometimes it takes years to reflect upon our life experience. Think of Julian of Norwich. She had a series of showings, is what she called them. We would call them revelations, which were terrible for her. But they were so profound over a number of days that it took her 21 years to unpack the mystery before she could even dare to begin to talk about it and therefore to write about it. And yet, if you read them, you see why. They helped her to see and to experience God in a completely different way. Completely different way. It took her that long to let go of her attachment to her perception of life and to see and to recognize that she was called, yes, to experience the wonderful revelations of the mountaintop, to experience that wonderful communion with the divine presence, and not or, and at the same time to live as an anchorite, literally, figuratively grounded to the earth. That's what it means to be a mystic. That's what it means to be to live in the reign of God, and why Jesus said, "Look all around you. The reign of God's already here. And yet, it's to come." And so whenever you have moments of truth, of beauty, of goodness, of life, of love, and dare I say the depths of pain, sorrow, suffering, all of it, when you go deep enough, you are experiencing the reign of God in a completely different way. And that's why you, in the end, you're surprised by joy. Because that which you thought was up ends up being down. That which you thought was masculine really is feminine. That which you thought was right is wrong. And on it goes. So the task before each of us as believers is not to keep our eyes on the dogma, the doctrine, the creed, the rites. Think of those as the containers. When we're little children and we receive Christmas gifts or birthday gifts, we're more fascinated by the containers than we are with the toy inside. Hopefully the older you get, you realize the real treasure is inside. Those containers are given to us at the beginning of the journey. This is why St. Augustine said, love and do what you will. Because the treasure inside is to recognize you have been created in love for love. And when you do the loving thing, that is authentic compassion. That is what opens you up, not just to the Creator and creation, but to all aspects of yourself and all peoples. Then you begin to see the message of Jesus and all the holy women and men, that in effect, it's pretty much the same. Keep your eyes on that which is true and lasting, and you'll finally come home to recognize who you are. God bless you. Thank you.